everybody. I'm Chad Eckert. Follow me at Edina Real Chi on Twitter. That's Joe Idoni. You can follow him at Tour Picks. This is the Preferred Lines podcast. Follow us over on Twitter at Preferred Lines. Week two. We're still on the air. But here we are. Another Monday. Our goal every Monday here is to provide hashtag not expert analysis, just banter between two buddies who like to bet on golf, about the betting board for each PGA tournament. Simple as that. What's the deal this week, Joe, for the guest?
I guess let's get right to it. Our star-studded guest this week, you all know him, you all follow him, the legend, the godfather of golf Twitter, at Smart Golf Bets, Mike Miller. He's got a new exciting venture with Matt Wiley at Golflandia he wants to talk to us about. Without further ado, let's hit it.
We'll do the best we can to get through these questions as fast as possible for you, Mike, so you can get to bed.
I'm going back to work for 3 hours after this. It's only 10 o'clock.
Okay, Mike, let's see. Honestly, I would be surprised if someone's watching or listening to this but does not already follow at Smart Golf Bets on Twitter. But if you don't know Mike Miller and his background and you want to learn a little more, there's a Fantasy Golf Pod interview that I did a couple weeks ago where Mike gave some of his background on tipping golf and shared a few of his adventures in the world of gambling. It's fun stuff. Now, Mike has taken his talents to Green Square Golf. He's started a new venture with Golflandia's Wiley, taking his brilliant spreadsheet and putting it behind a paywall, which is fantastic news for you, Mike. Congratulations on that.
Hey, thanks, Chad. Yeah, as I explained in that interview a few weeks ago, it was a do or die situation. And, Matt sort of, in a way, came to the rescue and enabled a lot of the technology and so on to make it happen. And it's been a successful launch, too, after a few glitches on day one.
Right on.
So what we're going to do here, first of all, thank you for coming on. Pleasure to talk to you. But what we do here is we kind of, it's a little bit of a rapid fire segment. So Chad and I will kind of go back and forth, ask some questions pertaining to the odds board, to the field. And that's about it. We just ask you, you know, do what you can to try to keep it short and concise, and we'll just keep it moving. Does that sound all right?
Sounds good.
All right, Chad, you're up first. Start the clock.
Okay, we got you 9 minutes now. It's Mike Miller, so we'll probably go over this 9 minutes because I don't want to cut Mike Miller off. Jesus Christ. But here we go. 9 minutes. First question for Mike is, Mike, when betting on golf outrights, do you have a rule number one?
Yeah, stick to your plan. If I plan to bet outright wins, just bet outright wins. Don't bet first round leader or each way or any other shit. Stick to your plan. And if you're going to spend $100 a week or $6 a week, spend that much, no more.
That's great. That's great advice. Listen, Mike, so I know that from following you for years that you kind of care about one stat and one stat only, and that's how guys finish. That said, how do you, you know, you kind of have the two separate columns, the recent form and the course form. How do you sort of weight those two when kind of analyzing the betting board?
I've got a little algorithm in my software that weights both categories of form against the strength of the field that it was achieved in. And then a second part of that algorithm looks at how players perform on particular courses and whether that's better, the same, or worse than their career performance level. And as it pans out, each course has an element or a component of between 0 and 20% of the total process of mine that goes into giving them a price. So in other words, course form doesn't matter a lot. There are a few courses where it does matter, and most courses it matters a little bit, but mostly it's all about recent form and player quality.
So then this week, are you worried about a Pete Dye specialist? Does that come into your factors for pricing players? A Pete Dye guy, better chance here?
It's not one of the factors that my software rates. But if I dig deeper on a player, sometimes you'll find they've got a better record on Dye courses than on other courses. Case in point, probably guy I was looking at about half an hour ago, Kevin Kisner, goes better on Dye courses than on the average course you might pluck out of a hat.
Okay.
part of how I usually start my process, Mike, is to actually pull up your sheets and kind of check how you price golfers in comparison to, I'm not sure what bookmaker's odds you use, but in comparison to the odds. So this week, I try to look for that discrepancy there just to, you know, feel that out. This week, I noticed there's like a 30-point discrepancy on Bubba Watson. I think you had him at 80-1. The books have him at around 110. Why do you see him at 80-1?
Yeah, actually, I had him at 60-1. And then I saw some of the books coming out at 100, 110. I thought, should I missed something here? He's never played the course, played really well last week. So I sort of compromised a little bit and changed my price to 80 so it wouldn't be hugely different from the market. But it was also a signal to followers that I thought a price of 100 or more was probably value. I mean, he can move the ball both ways. He played real well last week on a course that doesn't really suit. And he seems to have come into some better form since he got rid of those stupid fucking coloured balls.
Exactly. We talked about this together. You don't typically go to the top of the board. Is there a reason for that?
It's mainly because bigger payouts turn me on. Like last week, I did my absolute ass betting on Korean women's golf and PGA. But I also backed Christopher Ventura each way in the Korn Ferry tournament at just over 100-1. So it's 25-1 for the place. And that place payout on that ticket covered all my sins on all the other stupid, dumb, uninformed bets that I shouldn't have had last week.
Yeah, I was there myself. I totally whiffed last week. But, you know, you talk about the each way betting. It's something that a lot of people over here aren't as familiar with. So, you know, I know different books offer it to different levels. At what point or at what number will you shift over to the each way?
Usually the plan is 50-1, but over time I shorten that to 30-1 for ladies golf and seniors golf.
Okay.
Smaller fields, especially in the seniors, and to be honest, less players in the field who can actually win.
What about the long shots, though? You cut yourself off at a certain point because you don't think that there's any win equity. What number is the longest you'll bet?
Well, I bet plenty of guys at 1,000 on, say, Betfair Exchange, but mainly just because I rated them 200 or 300. So it's hard to ignore. Had one of them win, I think, in 20 years. Can't even remember his name. But yeah, just week to week, it's around about 250-1. On the PGA Tour anyway, where the form is very disclosed and there's a lot of analysts and a lot of analysis going on. Not so many surprises. So yeah, around 250-1.
One question that I've had for you for a while about your sheet. So I noticed something on where you have the pricing of your odds and the bookmaker's odds, how you kind of list above there 145%, I believe it is. What does that number indicate? Is that basically taking what your odds are and applying an extra 45% to it to justify for the juice or the rake that the books are taking? Or what does that indicate?
Yeah, effectively, however much that number is, it's bigger than 100 is the juice that the book has built into its pricing. It's typically going to be 140 to 150% on PGA Tour. I then tweak my pricing so that my percentage comes out the same as the book, so I can just do a direct comparison.
Understood. So basically, if you see Rory at 14 to 1-ish, the real sort of true value price that you rated him is 10 to 1. But they're going to list it as 14-1 to add that extra juice there.
Yeah, I could put another column in the sheets, which would be a 100% market, and then people could compare that to the 150% market they're betting into. And if the price that they were looking at on my sheet at 100% was still better than the book's 150%, then that would be like an auto bet.
Right.
But I think it's, you know, most of my followers are recreational gamblers. That they're not really going into things in that much depth. But the way I work out those percentages is you just divide 100 by the price, roughly. And it's not strictly mathematically correct, but it's pretty close. So a guy's paying 10, he's a 10% chance. A guy's paying 100, he's a 1% chance. So you just add up all those percentages and they add up to 145.
Sure.
So Mike, on a typical week, what's your routine and what's your betting card usually look like?
Well, there are several. The routine is I get hold of a field as early as I can. PGA Tour is Saturday. European Tour, it's about half a week or a week earlier. And I price the field. Another reason I do that is so I don't have too much recency bias. You know, a guy plays well in the tournament that's on at the moment and I get all excited about him and cut his price in half. Then I compare those prices with the market. I'll have a few early bets if I think the market is wrong. Sometimes I'm right, sometimes I'm wrong. I also back players on the exchange, which is probably not something that's so familiar to an American audience, but there you can be the better or the layer. So if I can back a guy at 100, put $100 on him at 100, which means I win 10,000 if he wins. But it also means that if he's, say, leading after two rounds, he might be paying 10. I can lay back what's called laying back at 10. So in other words, I can get somebody else to back him with me at a price of 10. And I can take $1,000 worth of bets at that price. So I've turned my 100 into 1,000 before the tournament's even over. So that's why the exchange is cool. And then the third component of my betting is each way doubles, where I'm putting all of my longer shots from all the different tournaments together in one ticket and hoping two of them place and dreaming that two of them will win, which happens three or four times a year.
That certainly pays out well. But one thing I wanted to ask you about also is you have an interesting kind of perspective as you were kind of closely with some of the bookmakers. So as just a bettor, I wanted to know what goes into the price. I mean, I know most of these books these days are just copy and paste, right? But in a normal session, when a book is creating the odds for an event, are numbers just being spit out of an algorithm in a computer, or am I imagining like a group of guys sitting around a table discussing each player and figuring out where the best price would be?
Normally, it's just one guy, and that's the case for the biggest leading bookmaking companies. And he effectively just rates the field in order and then applies his standard pricing approach to them. It all starts from deciding on the price of the favorite, and that sort of structures how the rest of the prices are going to come further down below. But yeah, it's normally just one guy. They know most of the players pretty well. They have a look at form. And the other element for them is they know which players their customers would like to back. So right. they might think that Rory is a 5-to-1 shot this week, or Tiger's a 5-to-1 shot. But they know if they put them out at a smaller price, like 4-to-1 or 3-to-1, their customers will still back them. So that's part of the art of bookmaking, is to get the money in at the lowest price possible. So in that sense, their pricing is not a reflection of the probabilities of each player winning. It's a reflection of how much money they can attract to each player.
Exactly. Okay, Mike, before we get you out of here, we want to talk to you specifically about this week, the RBC Heritage. Do you have any feelings on Jordan Spieth? Did you care to comment on him?
Oh, it's difficult. I mean, he's a lovely guy. He would potentially be the face of golf for the next 15 years, but he's, he's been a shit slump for, 3 years? You know, there seemed to have been signs all along the way that he was getting it right, but I think on a course that's tight like this week, tiny greens, you know, his excellent scrambling and putting could really come into play. But I think he'd probably have three good rounds and one mediocre one, and tie for 12th or 52nd. And sad.
So you're not planning to put a bet on Jordan Spieth anytime soon?
No, I mean, I rated him, I think, 60 to 1 this week. The books are about 40. I can't remember. It was all such a rush. But no, I wouldn't be backing him this week. I mean, I would never back him, to be honest. I never did. Probably never will.
Good answer.
Mostly because he wasn't paying enough.
Right. Too popular.
Speaking of who you're backing, Mike, we have to ask, your favorite preferred play this week, given the odds for the Heritage. You got a guy, you got a name for it?
Well, I mean, we're all sort of trolling around in the dark here with just 1 week's form on the board. I like to have 12 or 16 weeks form and to analyze that. The best I can do is probably each way Kevin Kisner. He's pretty straight off the tee. He's excellent around the greens. It's Bermuda greens this week, and he's a good Bermuda putter. And he played well enough last week to, you know, showed a bit. So I think he opened at 66s. That looked pretty good to me. So he's the only one at this stage that I've sorted out, except I'll also have to put some money on Matthew Naismith because he's haunted me for 2 years.
Interesting. What is he, 200 to 1?
Yeah, 250, I think, with the book that I can get on with. He's a local. In fact, I think he won the Junior Heritage on this course in his younger days.
He did. And he proposed to his now wife, I guess, on the 18th green. I read that.
Oh, okay. Even better. And also, I think on the Corn Ferry Tour last year, he was number one for the season in GIR. And greens and reg is really important here. So, you know, he might be a good top 10 or top 20 bet if you can get a good price.
Or DraftKings.
What's that?
Yeah, exactly. Well, sorry. Mike, we had you on the Fantasy Golf Pod and you exchanged some stories with us. You kind of teased us with a pretty sweet story. You might be telling me to, no, I can't tell that story. There's a statute of limitation. But is there anything you want to share about the time you swam across a river holding 40K in a Ziploc bag to Nicaragua? Want to finish that story?
Yeah, I had an argument with the owner of a business down there. He pulled a revolver out of the top drawer of his desk and started playing with it while he was threatening me. And we were having a really serious argument, as you do in business. But because this guy was a psychopathic fuck, he started playing with his gun. So I walked out of his office, half expecting to get plugged in the back. But I walked out, went back to my apartment, rang up a guy who had just moved there and said, "Do you want to buy all my stuff? You can have a good price." Then I remembered that this guy had the airport and customs and immigration nailed down. The police chief in the country, which is in Costa Rica, was on the payroll, had an office in our office. So I couldn't sort of leave by conventional means. So I holed up in a hotel near the border and through a couple of contacts of mine, eventually got put in touch with a guy who took me across this little river into Nicaragua. And the only hassle I had, I flew to Houston after that. The only hassle I had was I didn't have an arrival stamp for Nicaragua. So I just shouted at them and said, you know, your staff at the airport must be dummies because, you know, I came through the airport 3 days ago. Brilliant. And then I got to Houston and booked a flight on to Australia, which was home at the time. And I got pulled aside by American immigration in Houston. They said, "What have you been doing in Costa Rica?" And I said, "Oh, I've been on holiday." And they said, "For a year?" I said, "Yeah, it was a good holiday." "Have you been involved in the gambling industry down there?" And I said, "No, apart from a bit of betting, no, not at all." Then they had different people come in and ask me questions. And eventually after about an hour, they just wound it up and they said, "Oh, gosh, sorry, you've just missed your connecting flight to Melbourne, but yeah, good luck, see ya." I thought, okay, thanks, boys. But hopefully they're a little bit more mature these days.
Well, you've grown up, Mike, and you've become a businessman of a legal, normal, regular business with a not-so-shady guy, Matt Wiley, so that's helpful.
Yeah, Matt's only mildly shady, so definitely a step up.
Well, hey, if we want to access to your sheets and we want to pay you for that, where do we go and how do we get it?
Well, the site's greensquare.golf. We were going to make it free for a while, but it was getting complicated with the software programming. So in the end, we thought we'll just launch it as a pay service. If you pay for a year, it works out at less than $2 a week. So we've got three plans, $10 a week for 4 weeks. I think $27 a week for 12 weeks and $99.99, say $100 for 52 weeks. And that's for everything. We're going to cover every tour in the world that bookmakers are betting on. So that'll be up to 10 tournaments some weeks, even 12, which you guys probably can't bet on, but that'll come. And, you'll see that there are opportunities in Japan and Asia and Europe and Australia and South Africa that aren't available on, say, the PGA Tour. So the smarter bettors will start looking further afield. And this service will really come into its own then. And in a week or two, we're launching a really cool feature where you can actually click on a form data point and see where it was achieved, which is really handy. Sometimes a guy has been playing well on another tour will suddenly be playing this week and you think, he got second 3 weeks ago, where the hell was that? So you'll be able to click and see that it was in the Trophy Hassan in Morocco on the European tour, or as a Corn Ferry event or a McKenzie tour, whatever. Love it. So yeah, global coverage and going for 100% accuracy. So so far so good.
Cool.
I love Mike. I find myself often overanalyzing golf quite a bit. So your site really kind of simplifies things and leads you to the most important data, including your geography notes on the course, which I'm a big fan of. I always love to know where the local airport hub is. It's a great feature added on there as well. Best of luck with everything you do with Matt. We appreciate you.
Okay. Thanks for having me on, guys. Good luck this week to everybody.
I'm on Kisner too, so let's get his win. Let's go.
Okay. See ya.
All right, Mike. See ya, Mike.
Okay, cheers. See you guys. Thanks.
Mike Miller. Smart golf bets. Dude, how great is Mike Miller?
Oh my God, man. I think you tweeted out earlier, like, he needs an autobiography ASAP. We need a book on all of Mike Miller's stories. He was great. He gave us, tipped us a few picks, and more than that, kind of led us behind the curtain into some of the things that go on behind closed doors at the sports book, and brought us in on that wild ride of a story he had.
Dude, he's the James Bond of PGA touts.
Dude, no kidding, bro.
It's time to take the turn. I see you've cracked your beer over there.
Yes.
Cracking mine. We're going to get to the board now. We do the interview and the questions with the real expert at the beginning, and you don't even have to listen to this part because you already got all the analysis from the one and only Mike Miller. But we're not going to waste time talking about last week's losers. We're going to move on and get right into this stacked field, RBC Heritage. The tippity tip top again this week, Rory McIlroy, but you can get him at a little better number at the RBC than he was last week. 11-1, or where is he on this board? We're using a weird board. We're using different boards, but we're using a board, and it's got 11-1 on Rory. And then you got Bryson right underneath that, 14-1 with JT and Rom. The miscut man is also 18-1 right there. Xander 20-1. Whew. And Colin Morikawa, our guys from last week, 25-1. Should we talk about those six guys? Rory, Bryson, JT, Rom, Xander, Morikawa.
Yeah, interesting they added a couple points to Rory there. I don't really feel like they had to do that, but I guess maybe his Sunday showing, and they realized that in these sort of stack fields, look, these are basically playing like a WGC event when you kind of look at that leaderboard. Every event at the start of the season here is going to be stacked. So many of these tournaments, like the Heritage, like the Charles Schwab, like even the Travelers to some degree, historically we see some long shots go down here. I just feel like it's going to be tough because they're not normally seeing the strength of this type of field come through.
You know, I'm only looking at what I can control, and that's what my gut tells me to do, Joe. Here's what I'm going to do. JT, 14-1. I'm going to go with that. I've seen it. I saw him frustrated, missing putts, getting close. Off the tee game was bad last week for Justin Thomas. That doesn't make any sense. I think he's going to – I've been here before where I've witnessed with my own eyeballs when he had an interview with Amanda Baliones, and he was just angry about it, and he was just mad. And I could see the frustration kind of build, and he didn't perform the way he wanted to on Sunday. So Justin Thomas is my guy at the top of the board.
Yeah, it's nice. JT, like you kind of alluded to, he's an easy guy to read, right? You can kind of tell when things are going his way and when things aren't. World-class player. I think he deserves to be priced right up there around Rory's range. So 14-1 is fair if you want to go there.
What about the 20s and 30s? You got Rose, Reed, Webb, 28-1. Berger, last week's champion. Woodland there at 33 with Hideki and Spieth and M. You got any of these guys?
Yeah, so right off the bat, I bet Sungjae Im already.
Yeah,
he's so good. This course just reminds me in a lot of ways of places where he's had success, including the Honda. He's great on these tight, narrow, windy, coastal courses, and that's exactly what we have this week. Had a very quiet last week where they barely showed any of Sungjae Im at all, but he was right there on the leaderboard, scored well in DraftKings. I'm going back to the well this week. I actually caught a 35, so I'm happy with that. I have some interest in potentially Webb Simpson just because of the additional value that you're getting this week, right? Last week he was 18-1 out in Texas where he may be a little less familiar on the bent greens. Now he comes back home to a place where he's familiar with, a place where he resides, and – he's got 10 more points added onto his name. So 28-1 is a completely fair number. He's been the best approach player on the PGA Tour for the last 6 to 8 months. And that's what matters at this course. That's what matters at Heritage. He had a terrible first round, but he came back around in that second round last week before barely missing the cut. I might go to Webb 28-1. Who do you like here?
Well, before we talk about a couple names though, the missed cut doesn't mean anything. This happens a lot where a guy misses the cut and it's actually beneficial to the overall performance of his next time out. People going into the late rounds on Sunday, grinding it out in that heat, while he is working at whatever he specifically needs to work at the range. I don't know. Webb Simpson is not a bad idea, especially in a, maybe like in a DraftKings situation where people are mad about it. Bad him too. You know, I like him. I already did that.
Okay.
The names that I like are at 40-1. This is ridiculous. Brooks Koepka and Dustin Johnson right there. I got money on both those guys right away.
Did you take them both? See, I'm struggling here because I'm such a Brooks homer, right? So for those who don't know, this dates back a long time with me. My wife went to high school with Brooks. He's from this area. The course that I play that's in my backyard here, you walk in the clubhouse and there's pictures of a 10-year-old Brooks Koepka all over the place. His dad golfs there all the time. So I have close ties with him. I've rooted him on basically his entire career. So it's been fun to kind of catch this meteoric rise of Brooks. Now he's come back to earth. But a 40-1 just feels so disrespectful, bro. And the thing is his approach numbers and his proximity are terrible. If you look at the last 4, 8, 16 rounds, they're so bad. He kind of saved himself putting this week. But you have to feel like a guy like Brooks pays a little bit of attention to where he's at on the odds board, to be honest with you, because he cares what people think. Sure. So when he sees himself below some of these guys, below Colin Morikawa, below Jordan Spieth, below Gary Wood, below all these guys, and you're going to hang a 40-1 on Brooks. Another thing about him is I know that he's said in the past that he plays his best golf on his second week in a row. Plays better at harder courses. We know this. Just look at his U.S. Open track record. Look at his PGA Championships at Bethpage. This course actually, for as short as it is, it's at par 71, 7,100 yards. It's short, right? Played the 11th hardest course on tour last year, which was shocking to me. So could he pop here at 40-1? It's going to be hard to keep me off of that.
Yeah, it sounds like you're going to bet him based on all the nice things you just said about him.
I always say nice things about him, but I have to like kind of taper it with bring some realistic expectations here. Does he care about these events? That's always been a question mark. 40-1 is the biggest number I think we've seen on him in the last year and a half. Right. Might be worth a shot.
Same with DJ. I think a 54-hole leader last year at 40-1, Dustin Johnson screams like the best bet of the week to me. This feels like Spieth last week. You can get a 40-1 on Dustin Johnson. Sign me
right
up.
I know. The thing with Dustin is it's been his putting, right? It's been his short game and it's been his putting. What's nice about this course is it lends itself well to guys who are familiar with it, given some of the routing, some of the unique angles that you have to take out here. So he's familiar with it. 54-hole leader last year, but do you know what he finished? 28th.
Yeah. He got fatigued. It was the week happened. After the Masters. He was in contention with Tiger and all those guys, and he got fatigued by Sunday, and he lost it.
He blew it. Let's call it like it is.
So he's ready to come back with some revenge.
Yeah, exactly. Another guy in this range.
He had the weekend off, too. He's like Webb.
Yeah, another guy with the weekend off. I got to talk about him, Ricky.
Oh, God.
God, he killed me last week. He killed
me. I took him because you told me to take him. I know.
Listen, don't bet the guys we take. But if you do, I'm going to make a little case for Ricky here. His proximity numbers have been really good. That's one of the biggest stats I looked at this week because the course is so tight, because the greens are so small. His numbers leading into the break and even last week were not that bad. He could not drop putts. He had two horrible errant shots on 18 both rounds that cost him. The second one, he was just trying to pull off something miraculous, an eagle hole out, went in the water. Day one, it was terrible, but look, 30-1 last week, 50-1 this week seems like quite an overreaction by the books.
Okay. What about now as we continue down the board, you got our guy, Kevin Kisner. Have you bit on that guy? Because Mike Miller told us to.
I have. And I know, and I think you have too. Mm-hmm. Kiz is going to be a popular pick this week because of his course history, because of how his game sets up optimally for this event. 66-1. I saw our guy.
Dude, it looks like he's down to 50-1.
Oh, is he? Oh, geez. Well,
so everybody's on that.
Taken now. Everybody's on him. Mike Miller tipped him. Coley tipped him. The whole world is going to be all. That means we should probably lay off if you know anything. But
yeah, exactly.
I like him in this range. What about you?
No, I'm taking him, and I'm going to put a little shekel on Neiman at 80-1 because of his round four momentum. He looked hot. He nailed an eagle from mid-fairway. I was watching it on PGA Tour Live because I like him. I'll take 80-1.
Yeah, I like Neiman too. Another guy I kind of have circled here, I haven't bet yet, but at 80-1 is Joel Damon. He's been playing tremendously. He's has top 20s in his last three starts, played well, was playing golf actually on the Outlaw Tour over the break, as we know. Finished 16th here last year, and his approach numbers have been off the charts. He's been one of the most consistent guys approach-wise, proximity-wise over the last 4, 5, 6 months. Needs to hole in some putts, and we'll see what happens, but I think 80-1 is a fair number on him.
What about the long shots this week? Joe, are you ready for your video tomorrow, lunch drive? Who do you have in mind, do you think?
Yeah, we'll do some long shots. I'm going to keep that a little bit secret, but I got some guys that I like. All right. So
wait, why secret? Because we have to go find it on Twitter? Is that what you're trying to say?
I am going to talk about one guy that I need to speak about that is being completely disrespected by the bookmakers. My book had him at 110-1. B starts with a B, ends with an ADA. They have him at like 66, but I snagged a 110. He's out there in triple digits in places. Bubba Watson. You look at the names that they sandwiched him in between on these odds boards, and it is insane. They act like this guy isn't a multiple major winner, PGA Tour winner in almost every season of his career. We talked to Mike about this earlier, the biggest discrepancy between Mike's odds and the book's odds, 30-point different, 110-1 on Bubba. Listen, he finished seventh last week out of nowhere. Out of course, nobody thought he would succeed. Before we took this break, you had that run up through the West Coast where it was Torrey, it was Genesis, it was Waste Management. People were lining up to bet Bubba at 25-30-1. Now he's 100-1. Wait till the Travelers next week. He's going to be back down to 25-1 at the Travelers where he's had success.
I got a couple long shots. I'm considering 150-1 Lucas Glover, a Clemson guy, showed up last week with decent iron play and had no putter. So that could change. I mean, he never really does have a putter, but it could show up. And his wife, we know, is spending the money, so he's got to make some. 150-1 Russell. Yeah, Russell Knox, dude. I saw a little interview somewhere along the line last week where he was upset that he wasn't playing well because he had been playing well coming into the week and practicing well. So he was a little perplexed by the way his game showed up. And he has a good course history here. I bet at 151 that Russell Knox bounces back on a course that he likes. So maybe a top 10 bet on these guys. I don't know.
Lucas, yeah, and Knox. That's a good range. I know we talked about it last week, but these guys in triple digits, you should always top 10, top 20 them, at least to get some effort back, because it's rare that they pull through. I was kind of shocked to see his price at is anywhere in the range of 125 to 175 is Harold Varner. Carolina guy, played tremendous last week, held the lead after 18 holes, was right there after 36, was right there after 54, had a traditional Sunday down, but he was stuffing shots in there, and they're going to hang the same price on him. I think that he's really close. I root for Harold. I want to see him come through and close the deal. I'm tired of him leaving putts short on Sundays, man. Everything looks right in the hole, and it comes up a foot short. You've got to get it there.
How do you not like Harold Varner?
So much swag with the Jordan gear out there. We need him to come through one of these weeks. Could be a good fit for him.
Should we review our preferred plays for the week? I have JT from the top. I don't know why, but I'm doing it. And then I'm going M like you are, because, of course, you go M every week. Brooks and DJ. And then I'm doing Kiz. And I got a top 10 on Lucas Glover. Let's go.
Okay, so what I have in so far, I have Sungjae. I'm between Brooks and Ricky. I don't know which one I'm going to do there. I'm probably going to bet Webb Simpson, but I also have Kisner, Amen, in that middle range. And then I have Bubba. And another guy that I snagged 100 on is JT, who has a great course history here as well. Played well last week. We'll see if he can string it together again. A deep one that I'm really kind of looking at is Doc Redman.
Yeah, same.
Been playing incredibly good golf. He's from this Carolina area. Gosh, if you could just get one hot putting week, Doc is going to be there. Top 10, it's top 20 on Doc Redman. Yeah, I know. Huge, huge. So you can snag like a 20 to 1 on a top 10 on Doc Redman. Do it.
Or you go 300 to 1 on Doc, and then he's in contention, and then you do the live bet craziness that I went through on Sunday, and you end up with money back somehow.
Yeah, the live bet craziness can get a little reckless. If you're constantly on them odds boards, it's hard to steer yourself away from clicking, especially at this event. But one thing I know, the great Pat Mayo touched upon it, this is an event where Sunday we see plenty of comebacks, anywhere from 2 to 6 strokes behind the lead going into Sunday. Keep an eye on them. If you can catch a good number, grab it, because – that leads itself friendly to a guy who likes to storm the course on Sunday.
Make sure you follow us. We like to tweet out our enhanced sweating in play bets. So follow us on Twitter. Right. We did go a little long with Mike Miller today, went past the 9-minute mark of the front nine. So we're not going to do any Q&A by any means, but we do have a towel to give away.
Yeah, let's give it away. I'll tell you what, I'm going to pull up. So I did the thing earlier on Twitter. I have a good bit of comments here on guys. People drop some names that they like. How about I scroll through them kind of like we did the other week? You give me a stop, I'll stop, and we'll shout this person out. Give them a towel. What do you say?
Sounds good.
All right.
You should be watching this on YouTube, by the way, too, if you're listening to this on iTunes.
If you don't think it's legit, fuck off. Or watch it on YouTube.
If you don't know, I'm sweating. All
right, I'm going.
I'm sweating a lot in my garage right now just because it's hot in here. Okay, you're scrolling, and he's going to stop.
All right, his name, I don't know if you could see this. His name is Sam Spradlin. Sam_Spradlin85. He dropped a Tyrell Hatton on my comments. You want yourself a Preferred Lines towel. It's in the background here. DM me or DM the Preferred Lines your address. We will send it out this week. Throw it on the golf bag. Muck it up. Wash your dirty clubs with it on us. Thanks,
dude. Dan. And then next week, let's give away more towels, okay? Every one of the people, if you retweet whatever the Preferred Lines tweets about this particular pod, like you go to the Twitter and you retweet that, everyone who retweets is going to be into another drawing next Monday.
I love it. I love it. We've got some tremendous guests lined up as well already that we're excited to bring to you. Thanks to everyone who listened to us to ramble on golf for the first couple episodes. We've had a number of listens and downloads. So thank you guys. It's been fun. We enjoy it. We drink beers on Monday night and talk about the odds boards. And cheers.
Thanks again.
Peace out. Peace.